Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My name is Cynthia Pooler. I have Scott Ritter on with me, and Scott and I are going to talk about the politics of the Olympic Games. So, Scott, you just tell me you've been watching the Games. What do you think of them so far? And, you know, overall, there's the conflict with China and Russia and the United States. So what's your view on the entire situation?
Well, first and foremost, we need to, you know, understand that the Olympics is supposed to be about politics-free sports. You know, it's when the world comes together, you know, to engage in athletic competition that promotes, you know, the peaceful interaction of peoples and countries around the world. That's the ideal. Unfortunately, the Olympics long ago lost that. You know, the host country is putting, you know, this is a, it doesn't matter who the country is, when a country get, you know, hosts the Olympics, it's putting its national prestige on the line. We saw that with Japan with the Summer Olympics. We saw that in South Korea with the last Winter Olympics. We saw it in Sochi, you know, prior to that, with the Winter Olympics, you know, Canada, the United States, whatever nation is selected to host the Olympics, this is a prestige moment for that nation to, you know, to put itself on display for the rest of the world. This is why nations bid on the Olympics. This is why nations form Olympic committees that pour billions of dollars into building infrastructure for a sports event, because it is a chance for a country to say, this is who we are, this is what we're capable of doing. And normally, the world should embrace this. It should. The world should sit back and say, "Hey, this is China's chance to, you know, to say this is who we are. So let's sit back, keep our mouths shut, and see what China can do." I mean, there's a time and a place to comment on China after the Olympics is done, but not during the Olympics. And I think it's a shame that we have this, you know, this event taking place where athletes have trained for years to be able to come here and showcase their talents, and it's being spoiled by idiots who are seeking to turn the Olympics into political sports, not physical sport.
But, you know, this is not the first time. It's, like you said, it's been done in other, you know, in other meets. So do you think putting politics into the dialogue of the Olympics diminishes the games at all?
It most certainly does. I mean, it unfortunately, I mean, you know, one of the great diminishing aspects of it has always been the medal count. You know, you know, who, which country has garnered the most medals? As though that's somehow an expression of national worth. The United States doesn't emerge with the greatest medal count. Somehow there's a failing in America to produce athletes sufficient to the task. Or if, you know, if the Russians don't, or the Chinese don't, or whatever. So, you know, right off the bat, there's the, you know, an element of nationalism that's imbued into this competition. When the reality is, you know, it's not about America. The United States Olympic team has nothing to do with the United States and everything to do with the quality of the individual athletes who sacrifice so much to get prepared. And that's true of any country. You know, so, you know, in the Cold War, yes, you know, the Soviet Union, you know, invested a significant amount of resources into producing, you know, top-notch athletes. And you see that in Russia also today. You see that in China with the significant investment into developing a winter sports capacity. They want 300 million Chinese to be participating in winter sports. You know, and that can only happen with an infusion of capital and political will by the central government. But you know, generally speaking, even if you receive the money, at the end of the day, it's the individual. It's a human being who wakes up at, you know, zero dark 30 to go out on a run or a swim or hit the slopes, to go to the gym, to eat properly, to discipline themselves, to be able to perform at the highest levels possible. And the Olympics should be a celebration of that individual, of this person, this human being who makes these sacrifices to you know, entertain us, because sport is about entertainment. It's, you know, with the Olympics, it's not about an individual going out there and doing it for their own edification. They're performing before the world. It's entertainment. And my goodness, we should celebrate that. We should reward that. We should appreciate this. But instead, we're demeaning it all by dragging in politics. And politics is the last thing that should be involved in the Olympics. But as you pointed out, it's been involved you know, for some time now.
When I think about, you know, politics and the Olympics, I think about 1936, when Hitler was not pleased that Jesse Owens was the fastest runner there, right?
That was definitely one of the great moments in Olympic history, not because Jesse Owens sought to politicize his environment, but because Adolf Hitler humiliated Germany by making this about politics. You know, the master race, the Aryan race, and yet here comes a black man from America, and he's kicking the butt of all these Nazis. Wonderful moment in history. But again, the Olympics shouldn't be about that. Adolf Hitler made it about that, and I think history has shown that. You know, by politicizing the Olympics, he embarrassed himself. He embarrassed Germany. This wasn't an embarrassment for Jesse Owens. This, you know, and let's be honest, you know, America can sit there and say, oh, Jesse Owens. Really? 1936? Jesse Owens couldn't eat in half the restaurants in America, couldn't drink water from half the water fountains in America. Down south, they use the N-word to describe the man. So let's not pretend that Jesse Owens represented the United States. Jesse Owens was a hell of a human being, a hell of an athlete who went through a whole bunch just to get on the U.S. team and have the honor and privilege of racing at the Olympics. But, Jesse Owens is a double-edged sword because even though he made the Nazis cringe and he humiliated them, he was not widely embraced by much of America, who resented the fact that a black man was representing the United States in athletic competition abroad.
See, I don't know that much about Jesse Owens. When he came back to the States after he won the gold, was he embraced or was he shunned by, you know, the establishment and people in general?
He was embraced by some and shunned by others. Again, Jesse Owens could not go out and eat dinner in most of the restaurants in America. You know, this is a man who won a gold medal for the United States. He was a black man in a country that still treated black people like dirt. So, you know, that's why I say, you know, politics in the Olympics is a double-edged sword, because the second you start politicizing this, you bring out the ugly reality of what's truly driving the politicization. In the case of Jesse Owens, calling out Nazi Germany for its Aryan supremacy was a little bit hypocritical for the United States, while we continue to live in Jim Crow America, where black people were treated as second-class citizens, and Jesse Owens was not able to eat, drink, or be merry as his white counterparts were.
Now, the origin of the Olympics goes all the way back to the Greeks, right?
The original, the original Olympic Games, yes, were a Greek thing, Athens, yeah.
So when did the Olympics going every 4 years? It was at the turn. No, it wasn't at the turn of the 20th century, right?
I think the modern Olympic Games began in the 1800s. I don't have the exact date before me. It's something that's easily looked up. I think in the latter part of the 1800s, where you know, nations came together to compete. It has grown since then, and today it's a multi-billion-dollar enterprise.
And when did it start becoming politicized? Do you think it started
It's always been politicized. I mean, it should be. I mean, it's. Look, you can't have nations. Nations are political entities, and anytime a nation opts to participate in something, they don't do it out of unselfish reasons. There's always a selfishness attached to it. But the idea of the Olympics was for the Olympic Committee to be an apolitical entity that exists purely for the celebration of sport. But as you've rightly pointed out, Jesse Owens early on in the Olympic experience, that was an issue. Women's sports, interesting history there, how the world, viewed women, and women athletes, so there's just been an element of politics. It's just a reality of the human nature. Humans are political beings by their very nature. And so, it's been difficult to separate the two. But, that's always been the objective. And while politics hasn't been able to been taken out of the Olympics completely, it should be the stated objective of nations participating in the Olympics to minimize the amount of political baggage they bring in. But lately, the Cold War, 1980, we had the Winter Olympics, but a lot of people don't realize we had the Moscow Olympics, the Summer Olympics immediately after that, and the U.S. boycotted that. And then we had the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles, and there was Cold War tension there. Now that the Cold War is over, we saw how the United States treated the Sochi Winter Olympics. And we politicized that. Now we've politicized, the Beijing Olympics. We're boycotting it diplomatically because we don't want to, lend credibility to the Olympic Games by having Joe Biden show up in China. This is a problem. It's a problem. And, I was just watching a commentator on TV, saying that they don't know how China will ever be allowed to host an Olympic Games again going forward because of the Uyghur situation and the controversy over a female tennis player, etc. As if you can prevent the world's most populous and probably most powerful nation from participating in the Olympics or hosting it down the road. But that's the arrogance of the West, that somehow the Olympics has become an expression of Western ideals, Western values. And so now the West gets to dictate who hosts the Olympics and who doesn't host the Olympics. That would be as if the Chinese came out and said, until America solves its racial problems, the United States can never again be allowed to host an Olympics. It's absurd in the extreme.
Do you think ultimately the politics will ruin the chance for nations to compete? I mean, that sounds kind of harsh, but do you think that's at all possible?
Well, the problem is that, the Olympics isn't about politics. I mean, even though politics has come, Olympics about money. It's a money-making machine. We're talking big business, that's involved in this, the television rights, the advertising attached to the television rights. So as long as you have this much money tied up into, this event we call the Olympics, both the winter version and the summer version, I think it's always going to exist because, You know, politicians always find a way to embrace money, and there's a lot of money involved in the Olympics.
How much money are we talking about? Would you venture a guess?
Well, I know it's billions of dollars. I can't give you a precise number off the top of my head, but we're not talking about a trivial amount of money. The television contract alone, I think, is worth more than $1 billion. And then there's, you know, advertising attached to that. There's, the companies that produce, the various equipment that's used. There's the tourism factor. China invested heavily in this Olympics, not because they're going to spend all that money building up infrastructure for a one-time event, but because down the road they want to encourage people to travel to China, to embrace winter sport in China. As I said, China said 300 million people are going to be introduced to winter sports. That means that there has to be infrastructure capable of sustaining that. And it's not just that they're attracting internal tourism, which of course they are, but also external tourism. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, many, many billions of dollars are linked to the Beijing Olympics. And that's true of any time you have a nation hosting an event. They are looking for the Olympics to serve as the jumping off for a revitalization of their of that region, to create business opportunities long term. So, you know, it's a business that goes well beyond the actual sport that's being played out before us.
So on Friday, when they did the opening ceremonies, Putin was there with the Chinese president, and there's tension now between the United States and Russia. Why do you think Putin decided to go?
Well, because Putin and the Chinese president Xi have been compelled to enter into an arrangement. A new world order has been formed. I mean, most Americans don't realize that the world changed on that day. That Putin and the Chinese president signed a 56-page statement, which is the equivalent of an alliance, in which they, you know, we have Tony Blinken, Joe Biden, Jake Sullivan, and others, you know, out there selling what we call the rules-based international order. And we know that China and Russia have taken umbrage to that. Well, China and Russia just came out with what they call the law-based international order, in direct competition with the vision put forward by the United States. And that came into being, because of the Olympics, they brought these two nations together. Now, Joe Biden could have prevented this simply by showing up at the Olympics. Had Joe Biden gone to the Olympics, there was no way China was going to engage in this activity at the Olympics. It could have happened another time, but China has been compelled, and Russia has been compelled because of what we're doing with Ukraine, to work together. And now they have a vision statement. As they say, this is stronger than any alliance you could possibly come up with. And they have formalized a competing set of values that will be put in play against the United States and its allies. There you go. Talk about politicization of the Olympics. You know, that just shows you how stupid and narrow-minded the American government is, because we don't understand what's really going on. We think the world really gives a damn that Joe Biden shows up at Beijing. No, they don't. No, they don't. But what the world's going to care about is that the world's most powerful economy is marrying up to, you know, one of the world's most powerful producers of energy, combined with a powerful military, to form a united front against the United States. And part of the thing that empowered this, that made this possible, was the politicization of the Olympic Games. Believe me, the Chinese president would have loved just to have peace and harmony rule, to have Putin and Biden there side by side, smiling as the game took place. And Russia would have been happy to play that game too, because it shows China respect. Biden disrespected the Chinese. Biden disrespected the Olympics. Biden has humiliated the United States. And as a result, we have this new Russian-Chinese alliance, which is formal now. It's written in 56 pages. It's no longer speculation. It's no longer theory. It's reality. And it's the law-based international order that falls back on United Nations institutions and the United Nations Charter, which, although the United States played the dominant role in, you know, getting these institutions created in the aftermath of the Second World War, we have never lived up to the division of the United Nations. We act unilaterally. We act based upon the notion of American exceptionalism, which is why we have a rules-based order, because it's not about international law. It's about the rules dictated by the United States. And China and Russia have said, no more, we're done, it's finished. And it's not just that. They're seeking to attract other members around the world. China and Russia, of course, are part of this whole Eurasian, economic union. China is dominating one of the world's largest free trade associations in the Pacific. And so China and Russia are creating this center of gravity that's going to start to draw in more and more nations. And it's going to be the United States and Europe that's going to be isolated from this. This is why you have French President Macron flying to Moscow right now, because he understands what's happening. He understands that to continue this stupid confrontation with Russia over Ukraine, over the expansion of NATO, will be the destruction of the European Union, the destruction of NATO, not by military force, but because no one in the world is going to look up to them as the model that needs to be, as an example that needs to be followed. This new model now is the law-based international order that's being promoted by Moscow and Beijing. And the thing that gave it relevance, the thing that gave it a platform, was the American politicization of the Olympics.
So as the Russian-Ukraine debacle becomes even worse, like within the next couple of weeks while the Olympics is on, does that create, for the Olympics, does that make it worse for the athletes, do you think?
Well, I think it's a very bad thing to have athletes having to worry about the politics of their actions or the political ramifications of their success or failure in sport. An athlete should only be worried about his or her performance. That's it. They shouldn't have to worry about what context this performance is going to be assessed, evaluated, and discussed. We have a situation, right now on the ice where the Russian women, dominated, or the Russian ice skaters dominated the team event. Rather than glorifying, they have this 15-year-old skaters out there doing just miraculous things. But in America, we can't appreciate that because she's Russian. To appreciate that somehow means that we're appreciating Russia and Putin, and therefore supporting the actions against Ukraine, when all it is a work of art. And it's the same thing, when an American skier, Mikhail Shiffrin, fell going downhill, instead of feeling the absolute horror for her as an individual after spending all these years training for this event to have it washed out, somehow it's a blight against America, that it's a failure of America. Could you imagine the burden on an American athlete to have a bad day and then be told that you've let your country down? No, this is a horrible environment for these athletes. And I have to tell you, at some point in time, people may just start walking away from it. They can't, because there's too much money. If you're an athlete, Olympic gold translates into money, career, able to sustain your passion. So they can't walk away from it. But the Olympics is being corrupted by this politicization. It's a darn shame, because these fine athletes are out there performing to the highest levels possible. And we're not able to appreciate that performance because everything becomes political.
I have a friend whose goal is to, it's a young woman, and her goal is to climb the seven summits. And we talk a lot about funding, and funding is very fundamental in her achieving her goal. Do you think that in the United States we don't fund our athletes as well as maybe the Eastern Bloc might? In other words, in the United States, people who are athletes have to get money from the corporations and stuff, whereas I believe in the Eastern countries and maybe even in China, the state funds them. I think that could be a problem. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, we have found a solution, but most of that solution revolves around, you know, children of parents who are able at an early age to invest significant personal resources into the development of that child as an athlete. And then as that child progresses and becomes, you know, performs better and better and better, you know, because of the perseverance of the parents in seeking to expose this child to potential venues of development, you know, both in terms of physical development, but also funding to get a scholarship, to receive funding. And then once you get to that level, to continue it professionally, meaning, you know, as you move out of, you know, out of school and you become an adult, a young adult, or even a teenager, you need to sustain this to a level beyond which most families can't afford anymore. So yes, you get the corporate sponsorship and such. And it's only once you become established that the U.S. Olympic Committee will come in and provide some sort of, you know, funding to sustain you through the Olympic period. But again, that's very superficial in terms of, you know, the overall approach. So yeah, there's it's extraordinarily difficult for American athletes to make it. And it's also it creates a socioeconomic ceiling, so to speak, meaning that you know, there's probably a lot of really good athletes who don't have the resources that allow them to be developed properly. So we're not exploiting the full potential of the national talent pool. We end up having people who are primarily well-to-do, the elite of society, that are performing here. And you know, in nations like in Russia, especially in the former Soviet Union times, talent was evaluated early on, and if you had the talent, you were given opportunities to be redirected into academies that would develop you, and the state had had programs that would sustain you financially and reward you for success and things of that nature. And I think China does that a lot. I think even Russia today has state-funded programs that that encourage talent at a young age to get developed for mm-hmm. performance on the world stage. We need to do a better job. I think it's ludicrous that you know, we have these fine athletes that you know, the sole reason why they can't compete is because they don't have access to the funding that's available to others.
Well, Scott, we're out of time, and I really enjoyed this conversation about the Olympics. I'm sure we will talk again. You've been listening to Scott Ritter. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.